Hi, I'm Mandolin Royal, and I would like to welcome you to another episode of the Poultry Keepers Podcast. Joining me in the studio are John Gunterman and Rip Stalvey, the rest of our podcast team, and we're looking forward to visiting with you and talking poultry from feathers to function.
You take a bird that's been running out in the run, and you put it in a show coop, it's going to almost instantly change the way they look. I know Sue Dobson's red champion up there at the Ohio National. If you looked at that bird in the coop, you saw that his head was shrunken down to his shoulders. His tail was going downhill instead of being level like it should be. And that was because he was in a coop, and over the top of the coop was a piece of plywood because they had set bantam coops on top of the large fowl coops. And anytime you do that, it's going to make them hunker down.
Yeah, so it's also important to look at them in all their different areas. Don't only base your opinion off of when they're in a viewing cage. Don't only base your opinion when they're out in the field. You want to see them in every scenario to get an idea of what's really going on. And then you want to find out what angle and shape and length and all of that you're supposed to have for your particular breed, because every single one of them wants a slightly different variation.
Yes. Now, and you bring up a good point there in measuring tail angles. And okay, we'll use breasts for an example. They have their back should slope from basically their shoulders back to the tail, have a downward slope to it. Do you measure the angle of the tail from the horizontal plane, or do you take into account the amount of slope in the back?
With where they're at in development, I've got some other stuff to pay attention to first before refining tails. So long as they're not squirrely or too thin or otherwise wonky, it's something I'm looking for later in the actual particular angles. I've got other stuff to fix.
The standard actually prescribes that it be measured from a horizontal plane as if the back were level to get
that
the proper tail.
Put
everybody
file
in the
that tidbit back for later.
And if your particular breed has a flat back or is prescribed to have a flat back, that makes it a little easier.
Yes. That's reds are really easy to evaluate tails because they have that long level horizontal back.
Yeah, that would make it easier.
And you were talking about looking at your birds when they're doing different things. Sometimes I've just been known to go out there with a video camera and just turn the birds out that I want to evaluate. I just sit there and video them as they move around, as they scratch. I want a natural movement. I want them to feel comfortable, to feel relaxed. You can do more to evaluate birds that way than any other way that I've found.
And you can go back and reference it later too. And you can check out some other details, like what their legs are doing, what their wings are doing, how alert they are, watching their behaviors. There's a lot to be seen when you're just observing. And then if you video it, now you've got references to go back to if you need to. Mm-hmm.
And you were looking at a video of some Chanticleer, and we'll talk about this in a minute, and you spotted something going on with the legs that I didn't see. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you do get flock blind. So having somebody else take a look at something, you spotted it right away.
Okay, we talked about tails and evaluating those.
Oh, I did have one more tail comment. One of the things I'm looking for is for the back end of the tails to be open rather than pinched. And then what that looks like is when you're looking from the back side of the bird with a head-on shot of the rear, if those tail feathers touch each other and it's real tight, that can indicate a narrowness that's on the backside that's not just the tail. Once you put your hands on them, you can confirm it. But I'm looking for almost like a tented shape there where there's an openness between either side of those tail feathers.
The old timers used to call that a teepee shape because If you look at the bird from the rear end, it's got that long, elongated V shape. Rest assured, that's tied in to the width of the back most of the time.
That's mirroring the structure that's ahead of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can look at the leg. How far are the legs apart? The wider the legs are apart, the greater the width of the tail will be from side to side. Mm-hmm.
the spread of the tail is directly tied, at least to the latter half of the body capacity.
Oh, yeah. And hey, you brought up something good, and that's the next thing I think we need to talk about is body capacity. What it is, why it's important, and how to look for it. John, what are your thoughts?
You need the basic room for the organs to fit and do their stuff naturally. Too tight of a body, too narrow. I equate everything to the kitchen. I see some things that are torpedo shaped, like torpedo rolls. They're narrow at the front and narrow at the back and broadest at the shoulders, but it's too pinched, and that's going to cause all the internal organs to be stressed. So I like to go for this cinder block shape where I've got a lot of room for the hen to have her organs and do her reproductive thing. And roosters can be roosters. They need to be able to defend their flock and be able to carry themselves and ward off predators, or at least warn of them.
And I had somebody ask me one time, why do I need to be worried about body capacity? So body capacity dictates so much else that goes on in a bird: rate of growth, weight gain,
fertility. It's the frame. It's what everything is built on. You can't, you can't put 2 pounds of poop in a 1 pound bag, as my grandfather
said. Exactly. And remember that even during egg laying, once it's into the, what do they call that? The calcification process, that egg's in there spinning and turning and moving down through the laying track. And if it's tight, then it's going to not function probably as well as it should. And it's going to want a priority of space that can affect the other organs, especially if you get them too fat. That further causes additional inside constriction, and you might see some problems coming from poor structure, poor capacity.
You could have torpedo shaped eggs, or you could have golf ball shaped eggs, and that's going to be a reflection on the body capacity.
Another thing is that body capacity is linked to, if you have birds that your females suffer from getting egg bound, they can't actually lay the egg because the egg is so big and they have that physical blockage there between the pubic bones. That can cause you some real problems. It causes you to lose some of those birds.
You'll absolutely lose them, because if they prolapse once, they're going to do it again.
Then you need to lose them.
Yeah, they shouldn't be part of the breeding equation. That's for sure.
Nature selects pretty well for us. Naturally, we're the ones messing it up, because we're always, I think, trying to go, this is a really nice bird, let's give her a chance, when you should have maybe put her in the stew pot a long time ago.
Yeah, there's not any one trait that is worth sacrificing the important things for. It doesn't matter what their head is like, what their comb is, their color. That all is secondary, at least to me. It is when you're looking at those more important utility traits that help with their health and function.
So, Rip, there's a couple of terms that I'd like to clear up from the standard that talk about heart girth and, sorry, my brain's not quite working yet, but let's start with that one. And there's two or three more I'm sure we're going to work our way around to.
To me, heart girth, and I like to measure that when I'm evaluating birds, I'll put my thumb on the very top of the back up near the neck. And then I'll put my index or my middle finger underneath the bird. That'll give me an evaluation of how deep that chest cavity is. And then I top to bottom and side to side.
Is this in front of the wing?
I'm sorry, what?
Is that in front of the wing?
Yes, I do it in front of the wing. And the greater the heart girth, the more efficient that bird becomes at processing feed, do it, just being able to live. In other words, it's directly linked to the bird's overall quality and
the vital organs. They call it the heart girth because that's pretty much where the heart muscle is.
It's just like if you were measuring it on a horse or a cow or something like that, heart girth is important there, just like it is important in a chicken.
I like how thoroughbreds are so deep in the chest because they're working hard. And
yeah, the heart muscle needs room to work.
Heart muscle, lung capacity, it's all tied into that.
So what's the next one? Heart girth and then should probably bust out my standard here. I got copies of it.
We covered the depth of the body and how important that is. And so if we're just working our way down the bird, then we get to think about the straightness and the width between the legs, because that's what the whole body is standing on.
Like I mentioned before, if you've got a good wide bird, you're going to have a well-formed tail with a nice spread side to side and top to bottom. Although I realize that's a cosmetic thing, but that spread in the bird between the legs is related to heart girth. It is related to body capacity. And you want legs that are straight top to bottom, because if they're turned in or cow hocked, that's indicating a bird that's wider at the top than it is down at the bottom. Knock knee. Those are the ones that have leg problems, have trouble walking.
And yeah, they can also be bow-legged, too. And that's the opposite problem. And those are structural defects, and those should not be bred forward.
Exactly. And it's easy to evaluate if you're watching your birds. If they turn and walk towards you, directly towards you, or directly away from you, it becomes readily apparent if those legs are straight or if there's a problem with them.
Yeah, the more you look for it, the more you see it.
Yeah.
And I've also noticed that the legs and how they're set and where they're positioned on the body, and if they're coming down bowed in, there's almost always a very steep and sharp V shape to the keel that's very narrow, more often than not. And that's a problem I've noticed on most birds of most varieties I've tried. Like, it's almost like the underside of the bird is getting completely neglected.
So many people really pay attention to the top line of the bird, or let's say the top half of the bird, because it's easy to see visually. And they forget all about the equally important, the bottom half of the bird when viewed from the side.
For purpose and for table, the underside's even more important if you're worried about what it's going to look like in a shrink bag. That's the part that's turned up for display. If they're narrow or pointy or sharp or otherwise not looking very meaty, that's the first thing you're going to see as soon as they're in a shrink bag.
Absolutely. And amount of body fleshing is something we need to touch on too. Because if you don't have good body fleshing, you're going to have a really small carcass to eat, because that's directly tied to the amount of breast meat, the amount of thigh and leg meat.
Oh, and also your feed conversion ratio. If you're feeding and keeping and housing a bird for that long and it's only producing X amount of meat, where the bird right next to it is producing 125% in the same time, space, and feed, who's more efficient?
If you've already accounted for your environment, your husbandry methods, and you've already ruled out feed as being the either helping or hindering what's going on, if you know you're on the right track with everything, but that fleshing still is not there, then that's when you start looking at the genetic influence and if they're even going to be able to produce birds that have a better condition. And I've experimented a little bit by taking a really meaty bird and breeding it to one that wasn't that great to see how that would spread forward in the hatch results. And when there is a genetic tie, you might only see 25 to 50% of them as being as meaty as the one parent, and then the others are not meaty as the other parent, which was interesting confirmation to not be tolerant on poorly fleshed birds for the sake of other traits. I know it's not worth it.
To me, in a way, this almost goes back to what we were talking about when we first started, and that's the importance of the balance of the bird.
Yeah.
If you've got birds that are shallow breasted and pinched in, tucked up in the rear, it looks out of balance.
So for the first couple of years, maybe the birds that actually would look best in the shrink bag are the ones you want to breed from instead.
That's what I did initially.
Yeah, you put your lesser quality birds. When we're doing restoration forestry, we call it low grading your forest, where you're doing single tree selection worst first. You're taking the worst out first and only leaving your best trees to grow and mature. So you're always building the best possible forest. I see a direct correlation here.
Oh,
single tree selection, worst first out.
That's
and by
exactly
the time
it.
You're done, you just have great birds. And you're like, oh, you know what? You look the most like this bird and you both meet the standards, so you can have some conjugal visits and I'm going to collect your eggs and we'll see what you do.
Okay. We were on legs. Let's move down to the toes.
Those can be frustrating.
Yeah. Especially as soon as you get your incubation right. At least for me, toes cleared up a lot of issues. I was culling for crooked toes unnecessarily because there is a direct correlation to incubation temperature accuracy, especially in the early development stages. Right.
And if it's not that, it's riboflavin. Nutritional things can affect it. The incubation can affect it. You have a lot of legwork to rule out things before you can pin it to genetics.
And you were talking about nutrition. And it's important to remember that it's not just the nutrition we feed the chick. It's the nutrition that we feed the breeders.
Absolutely.
Because if they don't have good nutrition bases, they can't put all the nutrients those developing embryos will need up until they hatch.
Right.
A human finds out she's pregnant, bam, prenatal vitamins, folic acid especially. The essential amino acids become even more essential when you're building an offspring. I don't care what species it is. And that's going to help epigenetically set the chick up for success. Because as it's being developed, it has access to all these things. It's going to breed forward better and stronger. It's going to come out of the egg with a higher hatch weight initially, which is going to translate to its entire life.
I heard somewhere that if you see nutritional issues prior to 10 or 12 weeks, it very likely came from the adults being deficient in what they were able to put into that egg for that chick.
Yeah.
If you do get crooked toes or a wry neck or something, look at the onset. Is it before, after? 2 days, 3 days? Is it before or after a week and a half to 2 weeks? It'll tell you whether it was, I don't want to say prenatal, pre-shell or catch. What is the proper term for that? I feel so non-scientific.
I don't know. I'm sure there is one.
There is.
Probably is.
Pre-hatch.
Talking about straightness of toes, I got a question for you guys. If the rear toe twists around forward, what's that called?
Duck foot. I got one right.
Duck foot is when that toe's coming off almost at a right angle to where it should.
So it should come straight back. If you look at your chicken footprint in the snow or in the mud or whatever is soft ground around you, should come straight back in their gait naturally.
Oh, that'd be a good way to test them out. Scatter some flour on a smooth surface, set your chicken to walk on it, and it'll tell you where that toe is. Let's talk about straight keels.
Straight keels. You've been selecting hard for this, Mandy.
So hard. I'm so sick and tired of seeing that flaw. I've seen it in every breed I ever put my hands on, mostly because of how I was sourcing my birds, because I like to make things more work than they need to be. But the keels, oh man, there's a lot of different shapes they can be. And you want them straight and smooth and not bowed inward, not bowed outward, just a nice straight, even. Probably long, too. There's not too many that should have a short keel. But measuring them and getting your hands on them, that's the only way you're going to know what you're looking at. Pip, how do you measure your keels?
When I first pick up a bird, I put the front point of the keel bone up against the heel of my hand. And then I lay the keel bone along through the palm of my hand along my index finger. That allows me to feel, is it straight or not? And how long it is.
That's also different than how I do it. We should hang out and handle birds.
The other end, I like to see it inside the carcass after it's been cooked. I look at the cartilage and the bones and see. I have this image. Remember the old Battlestar Galactica series? The Colonial Viper spaceship?
Oh, yeah.
To me, that looks just like the cartilage and keel should look like.
I never thought of it that way, but you're right. So I'm not the only one 1980s. Pulling the bones out and looking real close.
If it's sitting on the platter and you're taking it apart when you're eating it, as I'm enjoying the meat, I'm definitely analyzing the carcass of the bird that I'm consuming. And
my mentor told me many years ago that good chicken breeders eat a lot of their own chicken just for that very reason. Because, what the skeletal structure is at that point.
And you can track it.
If I never started eating my own birds, I would not be breeding the way that I'm breeding. Never even would have come across my mind.
And if you're always going through taking the worst out first, eventually you're going to go, wow, that got a bunch of really good looking birds here.
My husband had that comment the other day. He was out there helping with chores and he was looking around at the pens going, these might be the best birds you've ever had. And I'm like, how do you know? You're not a chicken guy.
I've been paying attention.
They're different. They're different than they've ever been. We had to eat a lot of them to get here. And if you're not eating them, then what are you going to do with them? That was my biggest hang up on what do you do with your calls to be responsible about it? Because they're going to end up in another flock somewhere. They may or may not be hatching their problems forward. Do you want to stop it with you? Put them in the freezer? Or do you want to pass them along to somebody else that may not know what they're looking at?
I don't want to pass it along because too many problems perpetuated that way.
It depends on who they're going to. I have people in my neighborhood and in my area that they need a good solid layer. She's not good enough to breed from, but I'm comfortable letting them have them. The roosters I keep, they fill the freezer. That's the way, that's my toll gate to make sure that at least half of my poorer genetics doesn't get out. But I'm not going to sell out if a hen is coming up as a pullet and she's not going to be a good producer. She's got that narrow, tight, pinched, torpedo-shaped body. She's not going to be sold. She'll be put in a freezer very soon.
Yeah, because I look at
it. It becomes a financial responsibility to the person buying it. I'm not doing them any favors for somebody that's going to be producing maybe 2 or 3 eggs a week on the same amount of feed as a hen producing for 5 eggs a week.
Right.
I've got one other thing I want to bring up and talk about. It won't take long before we move on. And that's wing carriage. Most breeds, all birds, the wing needs to be tightly folded. If you see any tendency towards anything else, that's a pretty good indication you got problems going on in your wings. Now, it could be a split wing, and a split wing is where you're actually missing the axial feather, or it could just be a droopy wing or a lazy wing. And that's an indication that you got issues going on with tendons, where they can't tighten up that wing the way it should be.
And I see a lot of pictures posted, people asking if they have split wing, and they're confused because the axial feather is shorter than the primaries and the coverts, but it's still there. But it looks like a split in the wing. You got to go, okay, is it shorter or is it just not there at all? And there won't even be a follicle there if it's split.
If it's not there, it's going to look like a big gap between the primary feathers and the secondary feather, not just like a little immature feather that's still growing in.
Yeah.
That freaks a lot of people out, but they're usually fine. No, just count them. If it's there, you're good.
And in most breeds, you want the wings folded and the tip of the wing to point almost directly to the vent. Now, that's going to vary for other breeds because it'll be specified in the breed standard. Always go by your standard for the wing carriage.
More often than not, it should form a pretty tight-looking triangle. And females, especially, they can hide wing faults more so than males.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to open those wings up and get a look at them. And you even want to get down into looking at the shape of the feather.
Rip, you shared with us, probably on a different episode, your technique for evaluating wings. Can you do that again? The way you described it just seemed to flow so naturally.
When I first pick up a bird, and I've gone through feeling for the keel bone and all this other stuff, one of the first things I do is to open out a wing. I want to check, are all the wing feathers there? Is there a missing axial feather that would indicate a split wing? And I look to make sure that it forms a nicely shaped wing. And then I'll fold that back up. And I'll then do the same thing to the wing on the other side of the bird's body. I like to see, sometimes when I pull it out, I'll extend the wing out and then turn it loose and let it snap back into place. And that will tell you a good bit about wing carriage.
Oh, it does.
There it goes.
Yeah, pull it all the way out.
Trying to push out.
look for that spring effect. It should pop right back into a neat, tidy little triangle.
Yeah. And you can do the same thing with the bird's tails, incidentally. If hold the bird facing you with two hands, one on each side of the body, tilt it forward and then back down real quick.
It'll show you the whole spread. This brings us to the close of another Poultry Keepers podcast, and we're very happy you chose to join us. Until next time, we'd appreciate it if you would drop us a note, letting us know your thoughts about our podcast. Please share our podcast with all of your friends that keep poultry, and we hope you'll join us again when we'll be talking poultry from feathers to function.